welcome to the first episode of the Schoolopedia podcast. I'm Cherie Kinnaird.
And I'm John Forbes.
Schoolopedia aims to make selecting a school easier for parents. Join us each fortnight for a conversation about schools and education. Before we get started on today's topic, you probably need to know a little bit about us. We've been planning this podcast for some time to supplement the Schoolopedia website, which, if you haven't visited it already, take a look at it. It's at schoolopedia.com.au, and it lets you search for schools, compare them, and most importantly to us, it lets you review them. So if you haven't reviewed your school yet, then get in there and do one. And I said most importantly to us, but really to us as in the service that we're offering to you as parents or carers for children, people that are looking for a school. Schoolopedia also has a snapshot of the latest news, the trends, the issues and concerns in the world of schools, education, teaching and leadership. And that's where this podcast comes in. So why Schoolopedia? Well, the two of us aren't teachers, we aren't school administrators, and we certainly aren't school principals. We are parents. Mine actually were at school quite a while ago.
And mine still are at school.
Are still at school. Yours are about to make that transition out of primary to secondary.
Correct.
And of course, we've both been students in the past, although one of us was perhaps a little better behaved than the other.
Hence not being teachers or administrators or principals.
So in our day jobs, though, we work in the people space of schools. Their enrolments, communication, parents, grandparents, their past students, or as they're sometimes called, alumni. And over the past 15 years or so, we've worked in and with schools all around Australia, all types, all sizes, and we've been privileged to witness the great and sometimes not so great work that's done every day in our schools. We know from the many community and parent focus groups that we've run that selecting a school is one of the toughest decisions a parent can make today.
Remember, Cherie, there was that one focus group where the parent who had already had his children in the school for about 3 years was still stressed about the decision that he had made in choosing that school. He used the word, "it's excruciating," at least three times in the conversation.
He did. I do remember that. And he was the parent that his child, if I remember, it was a focus group of parents who they were literally the reception or the kinder, the prep parents. So his child had only been at that school, I think, for about three terms, and he was still stressed about whether he'd made the right choice. So we don't think it needs to be that way. We want to bring you an informed conversation about all things school and education. What does all the jargon mean? How is school different today from when you were there? That's a pretty big one. We think for parents and for schools, just helping you to understand that sometimes what you experienced at school is not necessarily what you should expect today.
Nor probably should it be. You'd like to think that the school has changed since you were at school in that 15, 20 year period.
You would. And there's some really good changes, despite what you might hear sometimes in the media. There's some really great stuff that's going on. And so while we want to focus on the positive, we're not going to shy away from discussing how we can make schools better, what you can do as a parent to ensure your children get the best out of their schooling experience. And we'll be asking those at the front of the class, or maybe those who actually run the school, for some tips on how you can tell if a school is any good. And I use that word, you know, imagine the rabbit ears. But if a school is good, as in for you and your child, and is going to be the best choice for you and your child and your family. So the podcast that we're going to do will examine topics of interest for parents, we'll interview principals and teachers, examine the latest research, hopefully give you some insider knowledge and bring you reviews of schools. If you'd like to have your school reviewed, then certainly let us know. Hit us up at inquiries@schoolopedia.com.au. We'll talk to you about things like My School, NAPLAN, PISA, lots of other acronyms with school experts, so you get the real stuff straight from the horse's mouth.
We want you to be a part of this conversation. Send us your questions, your ideas for topics, and if you want to come on air as one of our secret guests.
Secret guests?
Secret guests.
Okay.
Hooded and everything. then send us an email at pod@schoolopedia.com.au.
And we're back. So let's get to it. On the podcast this fortnight, we're going to take a look at the five questions you should consider before you even start the process of looking at a school.
So those five questions today will be where your child should go to school, when they will go to school, how will you afford it, who will go to school, and why this school?
That's very good of you. Did you go through and do some homework?
It keeps you on track, Sheree.
Choosing a school should be as easy as saying they'll go to the local school. But if this isn't you, then there are a few questions you can ask before you even hit the road to get out there and start looking at all of the different schools that are out there. And answering these questions, we hope, will help you be a little bit clearer about why you're including a school or schools on your shortlist. So we might get started on the first one, which is, where will your child go to school? And that's not really the final school choice. This is more about the type of school. Is it public or private? Is it single sex or co-ed? Is faith important to you? Maybe not. But it's most likely going to be about location.
Which is part of the reason Schoolopedia emerged in the first place, because at this moment in time in Australia, and Sheree, you know the stats better than me, but essentially we have more children of school age needing to go to school than we actually do number of schools available in the country. So the where your child will go to school question becomes quite a big one if you just assumed you could go into your local primary school.
And that's right. We're great advocates for the best school being the local school, the one that's nearest to you, the one that perhaps your child can just walk to. But for you, we understand that today it's perhaps not always as easy as that. And sometimes you might live in an area where your local school is not in walking distance at all. So the where really comes down to, or it actually affects just about every other decision. So from transport to friendships to costs to extracurricular activities, the where is a really important one.
Sometimes it's even as simple as, do you use grandparents to pick up or drop off your children? Sometimes it might be easier for the school to be closer to where you work than closer to where you live, so that the children can be dropped off and picked up on that commute.
That's right. Because particularly if there's a couple of you working, or perhaps you're in a shared parenting arrangement, perhaps it is grandma and granddad that are looking after the kids. Convenience is a really big thing. And when you the location determines when you drop off, when you pick up, the working times in the morning, what time they're going to eat dinner at night. And if you throw in more than one child and perhaps more than one school, more than one age bracket, more than one set of interests or pursuits, then suddenly a military precision schedule isn't far off, and you could find yourself leaving home at 6 a.m. and not getting back home until 6 or 7 p.m. So location can be determined by working out your responses to questions like, do you want your child to be able to walk to school?
Can they ride their bike to school? Does the school support this? So you should check whether the school has bike racks or has a locked up garage or something that enables your children to feel safe when they arrive and that their possessions will be safe.
Is it easier for you to drive? Do you have more than one driver or car in the family? We had a focus group not so long ago, didn't we, where we were testing between two different schools with this parent group. And one of the mums actually said, look, I prefer school A, but we chose school B because I'm the only driver in the family and that one's just easier and quicker for me to get to.
And some schools will have bus services that are specific to their schools, but a lot of the state and council-run bus facilities allow you to have your child picked up and dropped off pretty close to school within a school environment, so they're there on time and they get picked up on time. So check that. The websites have normally got some pretty good bus routes available.
And we will do a podcast in the future on some of our attitudes, I guess, towards the freedoms that we give our children and our students But, you know, a question for you to ask is definitely, are you happy for your child to use public transport? Because that sometimes can be a really viable option for you and can expand the number of schools that you're able to consider when you're looking for a school for your child. As John mentioned before, there might be a school that's close to where you work, and that could be easier than picking the one that is closer to home.
Another big one that we have out of parents is their after school and before school care. So when you transition from using daycare and childcare and those facilities or those services, schools that have an after school and before school care are something that you should consider when looking at school options.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And the other thing, you know, sharing logistics with another family. Some schools are really good at, and this is a question you can ask when you go to visit that school, what do they do to help you match up with other families to see, you know, how do they introduce you so that you might be able to find that you can perhaps share the load each during term time in getting kids to and from school, but also to and from things like, you know, sports practices and match days and those sorts of things. Another really cool thing that I love are those schools that provide things called a walking school bus or a bicycle train. And there are also terms that, you know, you can Google. I may well write something about that for the site. But
explain to them what that is.
So it might be that the school, you often see this, that there might be a month where sometimes this is promoted, but essentially a parent or parents will nominate. And the walking school bus is a bit like, you know, getting a gaggle of kids and you pick them up door to door and you're walking them safely to school. So, you know, you walk your children just about every morning to school. You're able to do that. But for some parents, that's not been an option either for safety or timing, or maybe they just think their child's a little bit young. And a walking school bus means that, you know, the old days of, you know, I went to school in the 70s, so we just all gaggled off and went to school.
So some schools will have that as a structured thing, and other schools you might be able to find it through their Facebook sites or parents and friends associations or something like that. But it might be another way that parents can find some convenience that's already existing, which may then change which school you then choose to eventually send your children to.
Yep, that's right. And I guess in all of these options that we've just talked about, whether it's public transport or you dropping them off or, you know, people helping out, sometimes costs might come into that. And, you know, I think we often make the assumption that it's only kids in the city that go to school, but there are children in rural and regional areas. They also go to school. And sometimes when we talk about where will they go to school, there is a big cost there because there are a number of families who might determine that once their child reaches a certain age, they will send them off to boarding school. Well, that obviously has quite a large cost component in it. And we're also seeing, aren't we, a number of parents perhaps picking what's called weekly boarding, where the child might attend boarding school from, you know, Monday through to Friday and then be with mum and dad. And they might live actually in a suburban area. It's just easier for them to do
that. So we should start talking about that because it is one of the five key questions that we suggest you consider. And that's, how will you afford it? Because even public schooling comes with some costs to parents. There are things like uniforms, shoes, excursion and camps, and all of those things can actually add to the expense on top of educating your child.
Yeah, anyone who thinks that public schooling is free also hasn't been in a public school in a long time, because all schooling costs, and just to give you a bit of an idea, I mean, you know, there are lots of schools now who require that parents pay or supply the device. Now, that could be, you know, a pretty expensive laptop or notebook type thing. It could be that they run something called a BYOD, which is not, as my daughter called it, bring your own drink, but bring your own device. But that still requires that you've obtained a device from somewhere.
And different public schools within the same area. So you may be able to access two different public schools within 5 minutes of where you live or within 5 minutes of where you're selecting to send your children. And the device program may be different across those two. They may run Macs, they may run Chromebooks, they may have laptops and tablets that are supplied to the students, or as Cherie's saying, they may ask you to bring your own. So investigating those things can have a big impact on what you can afford and which school is the right school for you.
That's right. And John, you mentioned uniforms, which, you know, seems a little bit odd to factor that, you know, I guess a lot of the time we think that uniforms are the cheaper option. And I don't know that that's necessarily true, having had two children go all the way through from early learning to year 12, particularly when they attended a school that required them to wear a blazer. I mean, a blazer is a pretty expensive thing if they lose it. But even leaving that aside, and you would know this with your two at primary school, by the time you factor in the summer uniform, the winter uniform, the sports uniform, and it's never just one sports uniform, there's always a whole range of different ones, school shoes. I mean, how much do you spend every year on school shoes?
Well, I think for most parents, the question is, when considering private or independent schooling versus public schooling, and they look onto the website and consider the fees and determine what's affordable. The uniform cost in some of those schools can be quite high. So Sri mentioned blazer and losing of blazers and children growing as they should. A blazer can be up to $200.
Oh,
and so
more.
If you're purchasing a blazer every year for two or three children, it adds a significant expense to already a significant fee.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you can hand down uniforms to a degree. And most schools will have a second-hand uniform shop. But I guess the point is it all adds up. You need to, when you're doing your budget and you're thinking about how much is school going to cost you, you really do need to factor in all of those different uniforms. And it's not that you have one set of a uniform. You generally are buying at least two so that there's one in the wash and one that's clean and on them. Excursions and camps. So some schools, this is a bit of a thing to watch out for. Some schools include this in their fee. Some don't. In fact, most don't. And there's going to be, I'm not even talking about the little $10, $5, $20 trips that will happen all throughout the school year. But most schools are going to offer at least one to three big ticket camps throughout the life of your child at that school. So John, you know, you're
the obvious one that you would remember if you attended school or that you're familiar with now is that a majority of kids end up going to Canberra at some point over their primary school or middle schooling life if they've gone to a middle school. And that can be quite a significant expense that is on top, as Cherie said, on top of funding.
Yeah, and I was reading an article only the other day that, a number of primary schools are now sending their children overseas for their camp, for their sort of, you know, senior years type camp. So, you know, the old days of, you know, you went on a camp perhaps to the local YMCA, you know, somewhere down by the beach, that's not the norm so much now. And if you are going onto those camps, there's also the expense beyond the camp trip. Again, there's often kitting them out. They've got to have the right bag. They might need travel insurance. So there's some additional costs relating to those. Here's one that's, you know, that we see a lot, fundraising.
So fundraising is, we encourage you, obviously people at Schoolopedia are very philanthropic in how we conduct our activities. Schoolopedia is a not-for-profit website, so we're very pro-fundraising. But what parents should consider is that this can too, when we're talking about how will you afford the school that you're choosing, this too can add up to a considerable fee over a period of time. So if the children are doing donations for casual clothes day, if they're doing raffles, if there is a chocolate drive, all of those things are an additional impost on the family budget. So it's not that we begrudge fundraising for valid causes. It's more about considering that when you're looking at the child's school that you're looking at and also how you're going to afford all of those additional costs.
Yeah, those gold coin days and those little donations, they can all, it's great for the schools, but particularly if you've got more than one child at school, that can easily add up to a couple of hundred dollars a year, can't it? I mean, that's, it's not too many weeks go by where you're not asked for some sort of a donation.
We often hear from parents when we're talking to them in our focus group scenarios, we're always getting asked for money. And then when we talk to the school, they say, we're never talking to the parents about giving money. But some of those programs can be run by the class teacher, by the Parents and Friends Association, by a connected group like a local scout group or something like that, that is able to use the school's families to ask for support. So it's just something that you should keep in mind when looking at what you are able to afford.
And that sort of brings us as well to those levies and charges that might appear on the fee list. You know, for a lot of the bigger independent schools, those levies and charges can be quite substantial. And they'll be called all different sorts of things. You know, they might be the parents and friends or the parents and committee levy. There's sometimes something called a building fund. The resources fee, there might be additional charges for, particularly if your children are at secondary level, there might be some additional charges for specific subject materials. So that's something to consider when you're looking at the initial fee. You might, if it's not there in the small print, you might just want to ask, you know, is there an additional charge for doing art, for example, or for music, sometimes for chemistry? Check the fee schedule or ask your business manager for a full outline of those sort of charges. The other big one too is if the school offers IB, sometimes there is an additional charge for doing IB subjects. So you'll
just
see...
Just explain IB, sure.
That's the International Baccalaureate. And the IB is offered at a range of schools all through Australia. There's sort of three, in broad terms, there's three areas to it. So there's the there's the primary years, the middle years, and then the actual senior years. Your school will generally tell you if they are an IB school. And it's not to say that you only do IB. Some schools, particularly in the senior years, your child might choose to stream into, let's say we're in South Australia, so the SACE is our year 12 final, you know, exam, and that's how they get their ATAR. The IB could be offered as an alternative to that.
So that sounds like another podcast for us to put together in terms of the language around SACE, IB, ATAR, all those jargon words that you've used. But what Cherie's talking about in terms of how will you afford it, consider then in the life of your child's time at the school that there may be some additional fees on top as they progress through their schooling that, again, we're suggesting you look at in advance so that it's not a shock or a concern when your child eventually gets to that point.
And let's not forget tuition, because it seems a bit counterintuitive that you're picking a school for your child. You know, you're picking the school that you think is going to give them the best educational outcomes. And it won't surprise me if somewhere down the track you end up engaging in some form of tuition for your child. And that could be music or voice tuition. It could be sports coaching. It could be second language assistance. They just might not be progressing at the rate that they need to in mathematics or English. And you'll go and engage someone to do some, it's quite common now to do some additional tuition. And that could be, you know, $50 a week per child. So that's just something to keep in mind, that tuition costs might also come into your schooling choice.
So let's get on to one of the other five questions that we're suggesting you consider when choosing the right school for your child. When will they go to school?
Well, they go at five, don't they?
Not always. So they can actually be... Well, Sri, you can explain it better.
Well, I guess that's sort of the common thing that we hear, isn't it? They turn five and off they go to school. But of course, that's not really true anymore today. Children are essentially at early learning. Lots of children are at early learning from about the age of three. In some states, they then progress to what's called kindergarten, or it could be called reception. In the Australian curriculum, the very first year of schooling is now called foundation. And so some children are ready to start school at five. Others do better if they wait a little bit longer. It's going to be something that you're going to have to check with the schools that you're interested in. And this entry point, it's changed over time. So, you know, even a few years ago, you had the situation where in some states in Australia, a child didn't have to start school until they were 6 years of age. In other states, they had to start when they were five, but then there was still flexibility within that. So you might have had, I'll use the term reception, as in sort of that very first year of schooling. You could have a child that might start reception in January or February, and just do four terms of reception and then move into year one, year two, year three, and so on. You might have a child that would start mid-year in, say, July or August, essentially in term three, and would go through and do six terms of reception and then do years one, two, three, and four. So that starting point is still a little bit grey. And really, the question to ask your school is, what is the best time for my child? When is my child ready for school? And so I guess the short answer there is no set time. It's the right time. And ELCs come into that your ELC, they're seeing your child, they're seeing them progress, they're being able to observe them in their learning and be guided by the ELC. They might say to you at one point, you know, when your child's four, they might be saying, yes, look, you know, John's well on the way to starting when he's 5 years of age. And then you get to about midway through the year and they might, depending on what's available, they might just say, look, it'd actually be better if we held him back just a little bit longer because he's not quite ready yet. So be guided by the experts who are seeing your child every day, and be aware that you don't have to send your child off to school as soon as they turn 5 years of age. Does that help?
That makes sense. Yeah. So then at the other bracket, we see a lot of parents who are anxious or concerned at that year 6-7. So we have schools that are suggesting middle school programs, we have high schools that are transitioning, we have a curriculum that is transitioning. So what do you suggest to parents at that, when should they go to school section of a year 6-7 bracket?
Well, again, I think you really have to know your child. You need to talk to your child and find out, you know, how they're feeling at school. There's a range of factors in there, but in short, it would be, do you know where they're going to flow through to for their secondary years? So let's say they're already at a school that that runs from the junior years all the way through to the secondary years. Now, if they're happy at school and everyone's comfortable that they're doing as well as they should be doing and their needs are being met, then they essentially just flow through. If you are transitioning from a school because the final year, say, is year six, and so you do have to now find a secondary alternative. As you've said, some schools have a middle years program. Some just launch straight into, they'll often then call it like a junior high and a senior high. I guess what I would say is if school that you're considering is in high demand, or they're telling you that it's in high demand, there's often enrollment tricks that they're using on you. So don't feel pressured. If your child's in year five and you've had their name down at, you know, school A for a number of years and you're on track for them to move there when they're in year eight, don't get pressured into, oh, well, you really should move them at year five because the place might not be there. If they're true to their enrollment criteria, then you would be offered a place. I think, you know, there are some schools who are doing some tricky things out there in pressuring, putting undue pressure onto parents around taking a place at school.
And then we get to those final year levels, particularly for the rural and remote children who potentially have to look at boarding schools. What are your suggestions there?
Well, again, you know, there are a number of options for you. I mean, you know, many rural parents, you know, for a number of years have used things like School of the Air, or they've had nannies or governesses. You know, sometimes you bus into the regional or the area school. A number of families, though, do look to, if they can afford it, they look to send their child off, perhaps to boarding. I guess the thing to remember is that in Australia, we're lucky enough that all children will be delivered an education. It just depends on what mode or method that education is delivered by. And that mode or method sometimes comes down then to you as a parent, to your choice or your belief in how effective you believe that method to be.
But overall, I guess what we suggest to parents is talk with your child and consider your child. So for some children, going off to boarding school will be the most amazing experience. And we suggest you talk to those schools about potential scholarship programs, that you look at special regional grants and those things to enable the child to have that experience. But don't feel pressured into going off to boarding school because it's what the cohort is doing, or because what it's always been done.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd just throw in there too is, which we'll probably get to either, if not in this podcast, in others, your child is likely to move school. I mean, that the days of the romantic notion that they're going to start at a school and never move, I just don't think it's borne out. We don't see it in the reality or in the figures.
The stats are 1 in 5 students will attend 4 or more schools.
Yeah.
So the feeling of anxiety around parents choosing schools, or the romanticism about their child being in one school for their whole schooling life, isn't actually borne out by the facts.
And you might find that, you know, you've picked a school and you've got 2 children in the family, and both have headed off to that school and they've been happy, happy, happy. And then you get to, say, year 9, and one child just very clearly needs a different schooling choice to the other. And there's nothing wrong with the children going to a different school. I mean, that they don't have to go to the same school, because if we are talking about meeting the individual needs of a student, well, that's not just within the classroom or within the school, that's also within the family and in your parenting or your choices that you're making as a carer for those children about trying to get that child into the best learning environment for them, not for you.
Which leads into one of our other key points about selecting a school, is who will go. So as Sri was talking about, it's not the same school for your whole family. You can decide on who will go to which school and be completely confident that if you select the right school for your child, well, then that'll be the right school for them.
Yeah, exactly. What suits one child just might not suit another. So I think being flexible and open to different solutions for each of the children in your care. You know, a small single-sex faith-based school with a vocational trade training offering, that might be fantastic for one of the kids in your family, while a larger local co-ed public school with a diverse population and a, you know, an amazing focus on the performing arts, that might be the best fit for another one. So it really is about being open to what is the best choice for each child in your family. I think the other thing to consider as well, sometimes in terms of who will go, will be, you know, John's already mentioned boarding. You might have a child who definitely just like cannot wait to get off to go to boarding school, and another who it might be better than to homeschool them. And we haven't talked a lot about homeschooling, but homeschooling is a viable option in Australia. Or to, you know, have them go to the regional area school. And that also happens in the CBD. You might have, you know, one child's on a bus every day for an hour and the other child is walking down the street to the school on the corner.
And with the increase in mobility of the workforce, so there is a huge number of students, something like 80,000 school students moving interstate every year. So in the area of who will go, you may be at a point in time in your child's schooling where you consider, even though that you're city-based, that child remain a boarder in that school that you've selected, as opposed to moving with you as a family interstate. Yeah. So some of those considerations, if there are siblings of different age brackets, maybe one moves with you and the other remains and boards for that final year. What we're suggesting is, though, don't be anxious about that, because you're not alone in those decisions. There are many students and many families going through exactly that same scenario.
Yeah, exactly. What else? What have I not covered?
The final question is, why this school?
Ah, why this school?
So this helps parents to re-standing on the sidelines on Saturday morning being asked, why have they selected the next school that their child's going to?
Yeah. Well, and we've had schooling described to us as cheap babysitting, and that was by someone who was at a fairly expensive independent school who said, oh, it's cheap babysitting, it's great. Others see it as a way to leap their kids forward. Most of us, though, tend to think that it's something that has to be done. We expect that all children will go to school. And we alluded to this at the very beginning. All parents have a view on schools that's formed and informed by their own experience. And what I mean by that is that schooling is an experience product. So when we're choosing a school, all we've really got to go on is our own past experience, because most of us have gone to school and we've had a good or a bad or an indifferent experience, and we've got some idea of what we think a school should be. And having chosen a school, that comes back to that parent who said, you know, it's still excruciating. It is an experience product. So we choose a school with, you know, taking all of those things that we've just talked about into account, but we still don't really know until our child is in that school and is experiencing the school day to day. So the view that we have, what we think a school should be, it doesn't mean that that's true for today's schools or for your child as a student. And your expectations of what you think the school will be, having chosen it, sometimes also won't be borne out by your experience.
So our suggestion, and this is probably the key point across this whole journey of selecting the right school for your child, is to visit the school. To actually go and visit the school, to, if they offer tours, go on as many tours as you like. If they have fetes and open days, or they're doing a car boot sale, or they're just running a barbecue as a fundraiser, meet the students, talk to the parents, and get a feel, because what is considered opinion is interpreted by one parent different to another. And actually spending time with those people that are in the school, and in particular the students, if that fits how your children wish to be and they feel comfortable, well, then that's what we suggest you do. So we have reviews on our website, and we have all the schools available in the country there for you to look at. But until you yourself actually go and visit that school, well, then you're not truly going to know whether that's the right fit.
Yeah, and we'll do a podcast simply, you know, purely on school choice, on some of those drivers. I guess the point we're trying to make in this one, in terms of why this particular school, is at the end of all of this, the question that we will consistently come back to you and ask is, are you choosing the school for your child, or are you choosing it for you? And that's a really important one, because just because, for example, every male member of your family has always gone to this particular school, that doesn't mean that it's the right school for your son or grandson today. And just because, you know, everyone else in your peer group or friendship group is sending their child to a particular school, doesn't mean that that's the right school for your child or children. So be clear about your choice, and always remember you're choosing a school for your child and not for yourself. So if you like this podcast, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio. And you don't have to wait for Tuesdays. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or subscribe to our e-news at schoolopedia.com.au.